Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb, and I have an interview for you this week that I conducted with none other than Roman Mars, the podcast host and author, host of the 99% Invisible podcast, and co-author of the book, The 99% Invisible City. So it was a real treat to sit down virtually with Roman Mars here and discuss 99% Invisible, both the podcast and the book, The 99% Invisible City, discussing podcasting in general, design in general. It's a fun chat, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Hi, Roman. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to start by stating the obvious, that a lot of our listeners to Stuff to Blow Your Mind don't really need an introduction or even a reintroduction to you and your show. But for anyone out there who isn't aware, what is 99% Invisible and what does the title mean?
99% Invisible is about all the thought that goes into things most people don't think about. The idea is that, you know, even these big things like buildings that, you know, they may be massive, but the story behind them is still 99% invisible. And that's where it comes from. When I first started, it sort of started as a show about architecture and design. And it still is. I think design is still its mandate. But our vision of what is designed is quite broad. It's sort of any human made thing is designed. And so when I first started, I gathered this collection of different types of designers, a product designer, an architect, a landscape designer, and asked them, like, what is the unifying theme to what you do? And I was going to try to name the show what that was, but I didn't want to use the word design. For some reason, I just wanted to avoid it and make something more poetic and evocative. And they came to the conclusion that if they're doing their jobs right, their job is 99% invisible. And so that's what the show became.
I think I heard the show for the first time on Radiolab, and I had to look it up. Mm-hmm. This would have been back in 2011.
Yeah. Yeah. They did us a real service by introducing us to a lot of people. I mean, Jad and the folks who were working on Radiolab at the time, we kind of came up together in the public radio trenches. And so that was just about the time when we started running the shows. And so I think there was a little bit of a backslapping, a friendly, you know, helping out a brother in arms in that scenario. But they did us a real good service of introducing us to their audience.
Radiolab always impressed me with its exceptional audio production, its sound design. Mm-hmm. A show that had a particular vision for, I think, how sound design could be used to help explain a topic. And I tend to think of 99% Invisible as existing, you know, within, you know, on the same shelf in the similar category of podcast or radio show. So I was wondering, like, what is your philosophy on 99% Invisible sound design?
Well, you know, it varies. I mean, what I like things to be radiophonic, which to me means if you were to read a transcript of the show, you wouldn't fully get what the show is trying to convey. You know, like mm-hmm. there has to be the audio element, the sound of someone's voice, the sound of someone's passion, you know, and then the music and, you know, like in a little bit of the ambient and field tape, you know, tell a different story than just the words being said. You know, we just do it to serve the story, you know, that you can definitely overdo it. You can sort of call a lot of attention to sound design. I think we sort of pitch it the way I personally like it. Like, I like a good amount of music. I like mm-hmm. switching voices. You know, like, I like, you know, I talk, another person talks. It keeps the ear interested. I think there's some mm-hmm. sort of, there's ways that when you're conveying information, varying that so that the ear doesn't get bored and then you sort of, your mind drifts off is really important. But we also kind of play it by ear. Like, there isn't like a huge, I don't know, just like a standard operating procedure or a certain mandate that we, when it comes to sound design, we are really talented, you know, composer in Swan Real and engineer in Martin Gonzalez. And, you know, they just make it beautiful and it just feels good to me. It was always the show I always wanted in terms of the way it sounds.
And have changes or trends in the podcasting industry affected the way you approach things at all?
I don't know about the changes in podcasting. I mean, you know, to say that, I mean, I like the show the way it is because I think it serves the way the show is. That is not to say that I don't love things that aren't produced to our extent. Like, my favorite podcasts are two people talking, you know, like, mm-hmm. and there's something really lovely about that. To me, there's just always like, there are these different trends or, you know, just like buckets of podcasts that do different things and do them well. And I think they all can coexist kind of nicely. I mean, the main thing that happened with my show is that it was really designed for radio. Like, mm-hmm. I made it for public radio. The original episodes are 4 minutes long because they fit into a slot that would go into Morning Edition. And then I was just like, well, I guess I'll put this out as a podcast because whatever, might as well. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And then, you know, and I say we, there was no we, it was just me at this point for many, many, many years. It was just me. And so, and then when it started to find a life as a podcast, it was like, well, let's just keep in that, like, let's make that a little bit longer because I don't have to make it 4 minutes when it becomes a podcast. And then it just grows and grows and grows. And eventually, a switch flipped where the primary audience was the podcast audience, which didn't have to adhere to some type of radio clock. And I was cutting a version for the radio. Mm. And then it sort of was off to the races, and it sort of, now every story is what it is. And so in a way, podcasting liberated me from what is the constraint of like every type of broadcast journalist, which is like, you're basically either cutting to fit a time or filling to make a time. It's like a huge part of your job as a producer. And I don't really do that anymore based on some sort of artificial constraint. I still do that based off of my taste. Like, I still like things to be tight and, you know, be purposeful in their length. So in that sense, podcasting really, really changed and made it. So like, now the average show it's like 35, 40 minutes long. It's like 10 times longer. Like, it's really something. But the show has kind of had its own trajectory, that I don't know if it really follows the vicissitudes of podcasting in general, but I'm sure I'm influenced by it some way.
Anytime I listen to the show or engage with 99% Invisible content, I feel like I leave it with my eyes just a little more open to the design around me. Do you ever feel like or hope that you're initiating listeners into sort of a different understanding of the world?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's effective because it's been effective with me. Like, you know, I studied lots of things to get to where I am. I've been a journalist now for 20 years, but before that I was working on a PhD in genetics. I studied a lot of things. I didn't have a real specific knowledge of design or architecture. I was just a person who would like go on the architecture tour if I was in a city, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I've always approached it as a journalist and as a fan. And I've noticed that the show has changed me over the years of making it. Like, as I've told these stories about all the thought that goes into things that most people pass by without noticing, I've felt myself becoming more sort of keenly aware of the world and how it functions, and actually kind of keenly aware of how well we're taken care of in the world in a certain way. Like, it's turned me into a more optimistic person to do this show, because, you know, a lot of people put a lot of care into things so you don't die, mm-hmm. like pretty consistently, or so that you can operate smoothly in this world. And we bump against the things that are poorly designed, and we notice those. We don't notice the 99% invisible things that are so well designed that they pass our notice. And so it has changed the way I view the world making the show, and what I've heard from people has changed the way that they look at the world. And that's super satisfying, because I think it really does improve your outlook of the world to think about the design of things.
I mean, you've been doing the show long enough that you have listeners out there who have grown up with the show, right?
Yeah, totally. You know? Yeah. We have someone who works on the show now, Jaca Maldonado Medina, and her stepfather, you know, had her listen to the show as a kid, you know, like, I think it was like junior high or high school. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's absurd. Yeah. And a lot of people have grown up with it, and it's pretty satisfying to have them. But when they show up and they're in their 20s, I'm blown away by that. So
now, I guess on the other end of the spectrum, you still have people coming to the podcast who are new to it.
Of course.
And you've covered so many design topics over the years. I wonder what your recommendation is for people who are new to it. Like, I know on your website at 99%invisible.org, you have a nice explore section that allows you to sort of check out areas by topic. But in general, like, do you tend to steer people towards the beginning, towards the most recent, or a particular foundational episode?
Never the beginning. like, I feel like when people tell me that they've gone back and listened to all of them, I'm like, oh, maybe I should take those down, because I don't know if it's worth it. But I think that I mostly say to listen to the most recent one. I mean, the thing about an ongoing series is that no one episode can sort of encapsulate what you do. What you do with an ongoing series is you're telling the story over time, and it's like this weird regression plot where it's like, here's a episode kind of like this, and here's an episode kind of like this, and then you draw a line through that regression plot, and that is the thesis of your show. And so no one point, you know, like, really exemplifies that, you know, especially when, you know, as makers, you're like, well, that's like, that's about an 80% of what I wanted it to be, or that's, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And so mostly I tell people to listen to the latest one. And, you know, we have a few classics. Like, there's this one called Structural Integrity that won a lot of awards that I think is a good episode about, you know, a building almost falling down. And, you know, that's always exciting. And what I don't want people to do is, in the beginning, I think it's fine to go search through things that you know you're interested in and go mm-hmm. listen to them. But almost the point of the show is that we're daring you with how boring the subject is. And what we're trying to do is, you know, is the production is sort of creating this delta between how boring an idea is and how we're going to present it to make it so that you really, really, truly care about it. And so don't read the description and go, nah, that's not for me. Mm-hmm. Like, try, if you read the description and go, that's not for me, try just one of those and see if I can convince you that this is interesting and applies to you in some way. That's the main thing I want from people when they try the show out.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astepro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astepro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astepro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astepro. Go to AstaproAllergy.com for a discount so you can get Astepro and go today. A-S-T-E-P-R-O Allergy.com. Astepro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles in a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, I'm a little late to the party here, but I recently picked up a copy of the book, The 99% Invisible City, that you co-authored with Kirk Kohlstedt. And it's a thoroughly enjoyable and insightful read, highlighting the details of the modern world. And matching with what you just said, there were certainly sections of it that I knew that I was going to be into anything dealing with, say, like underground infrastructure and like the whole section on infrastructure disguised as buildings and so forth. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's so much in it where suddenly there'll be a section of the book that is dealing with something that I completely take for granted sometimes every day. And it's ultimately a fascinating and illuminating topic, like traffic circles, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the goal, is that we sort of like, we can lure you in with some things that you might be interested in, and then we sort of lull you into trying to pay attention to other things. And the book was really interesting to make because I've been making audio for so long. Mm-hmm. And you know, I feel like I was approached about making a book like episode 5 of the mm-hmm. podcast. There was this sort of sense that books are the inevitable, like, I don't know, prize or something. Like, yeah. I didn't understand that I really wanted to make a podcast. But it took us for a long time to do it. One of the reasons was, you know, the partnership and making it with, with Kurt Kohlstedt. It was required that, you know, he work on it and be excited about it. And then the other was, like, I'm really into design, like, in a real sense. And to me, it's like the show is designed to be a podcast, and trying to, you know, creating some kind of deprecated, you know, transcription version of it was, mm-hmm. had no interest to me. But there was a certain point where the volume of the things that we covered, audio is not really useful for, like, scrubbing through, and, like, it's experiential, but it's not like, oh, I remember this thing about curb cuts. What's the name of that episode? And where do I find it? And what is it? And do I have 20 minutes to listen to it? And stuff. And there was just a point where all the stuff that we had covered and the sort of territory we've staked out of our view of the world wasn't being served by linear audio anymore. And a book was kind of like, felt like it was natural and necessary and good. And so that's what the book became. And so, and it has a lot of stuff that's from the show in it, but also a lot of, like, new stuff that we can't cover because, you know, like, as much as I enjoy the perversity of covering a lot of visual stuff in an audio medium, mm-hmm. To highlight the storiness of it versus the aesthetics of things, there's some things that are just impossible to cover. And things like roundabouts, where you try to describe the magic roundabout, which is mm-hmm. like circles and circles and circles. And it's like, you can kind of get it, but I don't know if you can really visualize it until, you know, you get some pictures of it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. That was definitely a part of in the book where I was very thankful for the illustration. And there are plenty of other places where, you know, you're talking about something and you can look at the illustration and be like, oh yeah, that one, that's what they're talking about. I've seen that thing, that particular star shape or whatever the case may be.
Exactly. Exactly. It does require a little bit a little bit of help.
Yeah. So it's interesting that it sounded like it was kind of, I don't want to say a daunting task, but like a task.
It was hugely daunting. It was horrible. Yeah, it's like, it's really, really hard. There's like, there's this, mm-hmm. this saying that I heard as we were making the book that was that a takeoff of the teach a man to fish kind of thing. Teach a man to fish and then he'll.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or mm-hmm. give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach a man a fish, he'll eat for a lifetime. It's give a person a book, they'll read for a week. Teach a person to write a book, they'll never enjoy anything for the rest of their lives. So it's really, really hard. Yeah, but I mean, like, Kerr really brought it all together. I mean, in terms of, like, the writing and the kind of organizing and project managing, like, he really threw himself into it in a way that it never would have happened. Because one of the problems with a really long deadline that a book gives you, you know, like a year-long deadline, mm-hmm. It has its own problems. But when you have a weekly deadline of a show at the same time, it's it's always possible to occupy yourself with the immediate deadline and put off the big deadline. And so anyway, it was really hard. So.
Well, like I say, the finished product is excellent. And you covered this already, but I guess when one initially hears about a podcast becoming a book, it's easy to think, well, okay, this is, like you say, it's just something that that had to happen. This is like the inevitable sort of cash in or the inevitable even evolution of the thing. This doesn't feel forced at all. It's very absorbable and also very just visually stylish.
Thank you. I was really obviously interested in the visuals of it, and our publisher was too. They, you know, because I was just like, you do understand that, like, designy people listen to our show, and if the book is ugly, they will never forgive you. And they sort of connected us with Patrick Vale, who is the illustrator who worked on, you know, hundreds of different illustrations, both big and small, to demonstrate what was going on, but also just to kind of set the tone of it, to, you know, the feel of it is both kind of like precise, but also it has a little bit of an abstraction to it in some instances. And I think it's a beautiful object, and you're always trying to figure out what to do when you create anything. Are you creating something like ephemeral and immediate, or are you creating like a permanent and beautiful object? And there's a balance of that when it comes to audio all the time, because you could fuss over it endlessly to make it a beautiful object, and, you know, it's kind of fleeting and ephemeral, mm-hmm. no matter what you do. But when you put all the effort into a book, it is like, it's incumbent, I think, to make it, I don't know, something somewhat precious because of all these just resources going into it, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm happy with it, even though it had a a little bit of an issue to figure out of being, you know, kind of fish nor fowl. Like it isn't really a coffee table book. It is a book of stories. They don't have to be read all together in a row, but they build on each other when they are read in a row. And you kind of had to serve lots of different audiences simultaneously. And again, this was something that like Kurt and I had just endless meetings about, just the structure of the thing, independent of the writing, to make it all work. So anyway, I'm glad you liked it. I'm sort of going on about it.
Oh, no. This is all fascinating. Yeah, I have the physical version here, and there's a digital version, but there is also an audio book, obviously,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there is, yeah.
What was that like, then turning it back into audio?
It was horrible. Yeah, it's like, I've been doing voiceover, you know, and narration for 20-something years at this point. Mm-hmm. Reading an audiobook is the hardest version of that, I think. And even though, and this is my own, you know, like style in our own writing. So it, you know, I know the material better. But even that was exhausting. I was realizing how little I talk in a row, even when I record narration or do interviews, that like, I was like, oh, great, I'll just knock out a couple hours of reading or whatever, you know, every few days. But I was exhausted by it. It was so hard. And when any author, and I know a fair number of authors now, mm-hmm. that, you know, ask me about, you know, narrating their own work, I'm just like, unless you really want to, like, just avoid it. it's really hard. But you know, the publishers and I know the audience, they're used to the sound of my voice. I think for some of them it gives them a certain amount of comfort, and it seemed important that it be me to read it. So I'm glad with the product. I'm glad we did it. I'm also glad that we appended an episode of the show at the end of the audiobook. Just because part of me felt like if you went away thinking that me reading this book is the show, you don't have a full concept of what the show is. And so I wanted to make sure that was present there. And so I think it's a nice thing to have. And I think if somebody's like, oh, I really love 99% Invisible, I want to listen to 11 hours of it in a row, it does serve that. but it was extremely hard. I couldn't believe how hard it was. I was so self-conscious about it that, you know, we had an independent, you know, company kind of cut it together, like who worked for the publisher. And I would pre-edit it because I would mess up so much that I would send like an edited version for them to go edit again. Because I was just like, I'm not this bad at this normally. I should be. Anyway, I didn't want anyone to hear it.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. So the title, The 99% Invisible City, does this leave open the possibility for future volumes dealing with different arrays of topics?
Yeah, that was the idea. In fact, when we went out and pitched it originally, I pitched it as kind of a set of books, like, you know, maybe one about cities, maybe one about sort of roads and, you know, byways and highways type of thing, and then about sort of vernacular architecture and specific to places. We ended up sort of like making the city one like incorporate a lot of that stuff already. Like as soon as we went out with it, people were like, whoa, why don't you just get one book out instead of like plan your trilogy? And they were totally right. But, you know, this goes back to the, you know, the original name to begin with is like, I was making a show about design. I wanted it to have this name, 99% Invisible, but I thought it was so evocative that I could do a season about science. I could do a season about something else. There's so many things that, you know, in terms of explanatory journalism that need to be explained better, and most of them are pretty invisible to most of us. So it kind of applies to a lot of things. And so I could totally see, you know, a series of books in different ways, or a kid's book version, or something that. I'm open to it, but it honestly hasn't, the internal drive hasn't quite like rebuilt to like, oh my God, I really want to go through that again.
Now the book deals a lot with the space where design exists between kind of, I guess, government and law on one side and user desire and experience on the other. You alluded to one half of this earlier, talking about how safer the world feels with a lot of the designs we have in place. I know we can't really place a value judgment on design itself, but does design seem to largely have a trajectory toward user safety and happiness?
Well, I would say so. I mean, design is about functionality, and it sort of depends on what master it is serving at a certain moment, as to whether or not it is serving one type of audience versus another type of audience, or user rather. And so, you know, you could say some of those things in the real world, they work at cross purposes. So, I mean, we just did a little segment of an episode that Delaney Hall did on the show about this idea of strodes, which is like a portmanteau between street and roads. And the idea here is that a road is a conveyance to get someone from one place to the other as quickly as possible. A street is a place that you occupy and live, and there are stores on it and park benches and things like that. And when something is truly a road, like a highway, to get from one place to the other, it works well. When something's truly a street, and it is for loitering and hanging out and to being in places, it works well. When things are strodes, when they're designed to go through quickly, but they have all these people in the way and stores that people are coming in and out of and stuff like that, then they work poorly and they tend to be really dangerous. So you could say, well, it was designed poorly, or, you know, it's sort of a little bit semantic, or like how you place the emphasis of it. You know, I would say that that's the tyranny of thoughtless design creates a Strode versus somebody really tried to make it this way on purpose, you know? And so we do end up with things at the end, which are poorly designed, that are dangerous, that do not make the world a better place. They are probably created from a constraint from this type of constituency, applying it in this way, and then another one to this way, and it creates this sort of Frankenstein, which is a poorly designed thing. And that is a, you know, a version of cultural and, you know, product evolution that is a result of, you know, people putting all their two cents in to create something that is not very functional for most people. But I do believe that when you do think of safety and care in mind, that we do a good job of creating those things in the end, and actually anticipating things that you may not anticipate and hopefully never have to anticipate when you encounter them in the real world. You know, like that there are these safety things in place that hopefully just make the world a better place, make you safer, but hopefully you never have to consider whether or not a signpost is a breakaway post, or whether or not trees along the side of the road, you know, like, you know, they're there to make you feel crowded so that therefore you do not go very fast. You know, they're meant to add some agitation to you. Roundabouts, like you mentioned, are a perfect example. I mean, one of the reasons why roundabouts are so safe is because they feel so awful. You know, like when you enter into one, you have to be really aware, and being aware and making the built environment break you out of your, you know, like maybe your sort of road zombification, you know, is a good thing for your safety. But it might not feel like a good thing when you go through it, but somebody thought about that for you. And so for the most part, I would say we endeavor to make things safer, but there are definitely some gaps. And mostly it's when a bunch of people are not coming on the same page of what the design brief really is.
Yeah. And of course, in the book, you talk about some designs, such as those intended to keep unhomed people from laying on park benches, that sort
of
thing.
Yeah. There's lots of hostile design. And again, it's serving somebody's purpose. Like somebody's putting it there on purpose because they're trying to commit a kind of social change and social pressure and influence through the built world. Now, the thing is that as privileged people, they're kind of doing that for you. You know, they're doing it for your benefit, you know, to the detriment of people who have less. And the important part about that influence is recognizing, do you really want that? You know, like somebody's making this decision for you. And if you don't know about it, then obviously you can't sort of like have any commentary. So our first job is to make people aware of what these spikes and these different sort of like hostile architecture, you know, like interventions are. And then the second step is to go like, well, is that a result you want? And do you want to like interact with your city to change it? You know, it's the second part of that discussion.
Your Strode example reminded me of parklets, which are also discussed in the book.
Yeah.
By the time the book came out, and certainly by the time of my reading it, like everyone, I think, especially in urban areas, had heard of parklets due to their role in the pandemic. But this is also an area that's between different ideas of what the street or the road is used for.
Yeah, a parklet is a really interesting thing. There's a sort of movement here called Parking Day. I'm in the Bay Area, which sort of pioneered this idea of like, well, instead of you know, putting a coin in a meter to you know, rent a space for a car, why don't we put coins in the meter and like lay down some sod and put some chairs down. And this is something I've covered for, I mean, for like 20 years at this point. And then it really came to pass when all of a sudden we're in COVID, we wanted to be together, but we needed space away from each other and space outside. And, you know, when it comes to roads, you know, for millennia, they've been these sort of multimodal use cases. Like they, you know, the people walked on them, people rode bikes on them, people rode horses on them, vendors set up in the middle of them. And then over time, we just decided that, oh, they're for cars. You know, no one else belongs on them. And you can cross here and here. And if you cross anywhere in between, you're breaking the law. And that was where our values lied when it came to the design of cities. You know, it's not where I would place my personal values, but that's, you know, we collectively kind of thought that that was a good case. And then COVID comes along and all of a sudden the value of that space changed and we wanted it back, I guess, as pedestrians and people drinking coffee. And so, you know, we decided to bump out these spaces that were used for cars so that we could be outside and enjoy things. And it was kind of fascinating because, you know, the book came out right at the kind of beginning of COVID in 2020. And it was an interesting time to think about the design of cities when this, you know, outside influence made us rethink, you know, how our cities should be designed very rapidly, you know, and thoroughly, you know, like, because one of the things that happens when you're thinking about design or thinking about your city is there's kind of a solipsistic kind of way we enter the world is the way things are and should be. And we don't really think about the continuum we are on when it comes to how cities are designed and should be designed. And so when you have a rapid kind of jolt to the system and there's a reassessment of space and the value of space in different ways, it's a good time to think about, hey, you know what? Maybe we do think about roads as belonging to cars, but like if you look at this book or look through history, you'll realize that roads weren't about cars. They were, mm-hmm. It's a pretty recent phenomenon that we thought that that's what they should be. And maybe it's worth reassessing these things. And I think if there's any sort of thesis of to the book or to the show, it's that the built world and the things we design are a window into our values as humans. And they always shift and change based on those values. And when you have this moment of crisis when it comes to the pandemic, it really did change our value of what a city was for and who it was for and what was worth giving up and what wasn't worth giving up. And, you know, as horrible as the situation was, mm-hmm. It was fascinating to sort of figure out those reassessments and realignments. And it's still like, I think some of the stuff that we figured out during that period of time will still linger with us for a long time, and maybe they'll be completely subsumed in different types of, you know, normal life, quote unquote normal life, will return in different ways. But I do think that there's like a sense that, yeah, these spaces, like, we kind of want them back and we're never going to relent. We're never going to give them back again. It was fascinating to watch happen as we were talking about the book so much and also to see the results of it today.
All right. Well, the podcast is, of course, 99% Invisible. The book is The 99% Invisible City. Roman Mars, thanks for taking time out of your day to chat with me.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you so much. I really enjoy the show too, so it's a real honor to be on.
Thank you. All right. Thanks again to Roman Mars for taking time out of his busy day to chat with me here. Again, the podcast is 99% Invisible, and you can find 99% Invisible anywhere you get your podcasts, obviously. And the book is The 99% Invisible City, which is available in all formats. Like I said in the interview, I've got the hard version here, the physical copy, and it's just it's really nice design in this, so I highly recommend it. As always, I want to remind you that Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a science podcast with core episodes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. On Mondays, we do listener mail. On Wednesdays, we do a short-form artifact or monster fact episode. And on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. That's our time to set aside most serious concerns and just talk about a weird film. Thanks, as always, to J.J. Posway for producing the show. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.